From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office today, so no update of the commodity markets. However, we will explore the soybean, swine nutrition, and all the things that have been happening on the planet in the last 2 to 3 years as it relates to protein levels in soybeans and African swine fever. We'll do that with swine nutritionists from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, Hans Stein.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hans Stein is a swine nutritionist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and explores everything related to swine nutrition in his research, including some items that are directly related to the soybean. He's been looking at this from the nutrition perspective for some time.
Well, the decline we see in protein concentration in soybeans and in soybean meal is a pretty big deal because it reduces the value of soybean meal when we feed it to pigs and also to poultry. And you have to remember, pigs and poultry, they consume more than 75% of all the soybean meal that is produced in the world. And so when the value of soybean meal is reduced for those two species, it is a big deal. And it has been an ongoing trend for many years, and it is because yields of soybeans is reversely related to proteins, protein in the meals. So as yields go up, protein tends to go down. And that means that the soybean meal that producers, they purchase, that becomes lower and lower in protein concentration. And that reduces the value, as I said, of soybean meal.
I suppose this creates a unique problem for the livestock sector because it is looking for protein and farmers are selling based on yield.
Well, I mean, that's exactly the problem, that producers are paid based on bushel weights. They're not paid on yield of certain components. So as long as they are paid on bushel weight, the seed companies, of course, they have to focus on yields and getting the most bushels that they can get because that's what their customers are paid on. And as long as the crushers don't have an incentive to pay based on components, then this trend will just continue. And I always, when I'm with soybean producers, I always give the example and say we used to have very fat pigs in the industry, but about 25 years ago, the industry decided that they wanted to have leaner pigs, and then the packers, they started rewarding producers who marketed leaner pigs, and that completely changed the pig almost overnight, and today we have very lean pigs, and in some instances, the pigs are too lean. We could do the same thing with soybeans if the crushers, they saw an incentive to reward high protein levels or high amino acid levels in soybeans, but that is not happening at this point.
What would it take, do you think, to make that transition?
Well, I mean, it would probably take the feed industry and the integrators to say to the crushers, we don't want your bean meal unless it contains a certain percentage of amino acids or of protein. And that has not happened yet. But what is happening is that soybean meal is being outcompeted by synthetic amino acids in a big way. And that is going very rapidly because the feed companies and the integrators, they can purchase individual amino acids and more of them, which means that they need less and less soybean meal. And so I think that's the biggest competitor for soybean meal in the marketplace. And then if you have a product that is where the quality is going gradually being reduced and going down, then that only accelerates the trend towards using more synthetic amino acids and less soybean meal. So I think that's the biggest problem for the soybean industry as such. Pigs and poultry, they don't need protein, they need amino acids. But as protein goes down, amino acids also go down, and that is where the problem is.
We'll return to the synthetics as a replacement for amino acids in just a moment. However, I'm wondering if you're familiar with the debate in the industry about marketing based on essential amino acids.
Well, I mean, that is possible. The only difficult thing in that argument is that it's difficult to measure amino acids in a given batch or load of bean meal. And so as long as that is the case, it's probably not going to be very widespread. But if we could increase technologies such as NIR that could rapidly determine concentrations of the indispensable amino acids in the bean meal, that would be advantageous. And it is correct that there's not a linear relationship between crude protein and amino acids. So if crude protein goes down by, say, 5%, that doesn't mean that the amino acids all go down by 5%. Maybe they only go down by 3 or 4%, but they will go down, but not linearly related to crude protein. So it is correct. Amino acids are the important nutrient, but our problem is we can measure crude protein very rapidly with NIR technology, but not very many can measure amino acids with NIR. So that's where the limitation to implementing that technology is.
On the nutrition side, is there a relationship between the amount of protein and the available amino acid?
Yes. I think that I'm not so much in doubt of that. Meaning that we don't have a linear relationship between protein and amino acids. And the lower the protein is, the greater is the amino acid concentration as a percentage of the protein. So it is not quite as bad for amino acid reduction as it is for crude protein reduction. Lower protein beans tend to have greater concentrations of amino acids as a percentage of the total crude protein. But still, a bean with 34% crude protein will contain less amino acids than a bean with 37% crude protein.
Okay, so let's try to put this into some marketing context, meaning that there are differing protein levels from the southern part of the United States to the northern part of the United States. And you're telling me that the amino acids don't follow on a one-to-one basis with the protein. What might it mean for marketing, if anything, for the soybeans or in the hog industry?
No, I mean, it's true that the further you get north, the lower is the crude protein, simply because they have fewer days to grow the further you get north. So Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota soybeans always have had lower crude protein and lower amino acids than soybeans grown here in Illinois, for instance. So that is, there's nothing new there. But I think if you are a producer in Illinois, you would probably say, yes, we should focus on protein when we are selling the beans. But producers in Minnesota may have a different opinion because their beans always have lower crude protein. And as I said before, they do have an argument that the amino acids are not linearly reduced along with crude protein. So the lower, even though the crude protein is lower in Minnesota, it does not mean that the amino acids have the same reduction in as the crude protein. But amino acids in Minnesota are also lower than they are in Illinois.
What are the components of feed that the livestock industry is most interested in?
Well, I mean, for pigs and poultry, it's the indispensable amino acids. For pigs, primarily lysine, tryptophan, threonine, methionine. Those are the four big ones that we are looking for. And the greater the concentration of those four amino acids are, the greater is the value of that meal. For poultry, it's the same amino acids, but the order is a little bit different because methionine is a first limiting amino acid there. But all of those amino acids are very important. And then after that comes valine and isoleucine. So we look at all of those indispensable amino acids, determine the concentration, and the greater the concentration is, the greater is the value. So if you really wanted to put a value on each batch of soybean meal, then you would look at those amino acids there.
And this is just not the way the soybean and its products, bean meal and oil, are sold.
No, they're not. I mean, they are, as you said at the beginning, they are selling, everything is sold on a bushel basis. So a bushel is a bushel is a bushel, meaning whether you have low protein or high protein or low amino acids, high amino acids, the producer gets the same price when he delivers his beans to the crusher. And so it's something. If you want to change the beans and you want to increase the amino acids in the bean meal, then it would take the entire industry, but the crushers more than anyone else, to change how they pay the producers for their soybeans. So if a producer is rewarded for delivering high amino acid beans, then the producers would start changing and start selecting those high amino acid beans from the breeders. But at this point, that's not the case. So therefore, we don't see anything in that direction. Now, the producers are only interested in higher yields because that's how they make the most money. So that's what makes sense for them.
You know, I can remember learning about the 10 essential amino acids when I was in college. That would have been in the very early 1980s. However, I'm wondering how long the industry, livestock that is, has focused on it.
Yeah, that has been, that's something that we started focusing on in the 1990s, and we started focusing on amino acids and the digestibility of each individual amino acid, and that has become the standard here over the last 20 years, that we only formulate diets based on digestible amino acids. We don't follow the protein very much. We are not interested in the protein. We are interested in these individual amino acids. So that is something that we have done over the last 20 years. So it's not new from that perspective, but if you go way back in the 1970s, 1980s, you probably would see most diets just being formulated based on crude protein, but that's no longer how we do it.
Did you say that synthetics are the biggest competitor today?
Yeah, synthetic amino acids, that industry is growing rapidly around the world, both in the U.S. and in particular in China and in many other places also.
How are they delivered to the animal?
Well, I mean, it's just a little granular powder that you can buy. It's very concentrated. You can buy a powder that's 98% methionine or 98% threonine, and you just add that to the diet in the amount that you need. So if you add soybean meal to a certain degree, then you can add tryptophan, methionine, threonine, and lysine to make up the balance what you need. So you don't have to add soybean meal to provide all the amino acids as we used to do.
I suppose it's very palatable.
No, there are no taste disadvantages to that, because as we take soybean meal out and add these amino acids, then we also increase the corn, and they like the corn in the diet, so that's not really an issue in terms of taste. And this is something that's going on all over the world, and obviously in Europe they have limitations on maximum protein levels in diets, because it affects how much nitrogen you get into the manure, and therefore it's also a matter of reducing pollution to the external environment. So they have different rules. China, they have just instituted rules where they put maximum on crude protein, so that will help the synthetic amino acid industry, and meaning that they will use less soybean meal. We don't have rules in the United States or in South America, but so here it's all depending on economics. If the synthetic amino acids, if they are less expensive than soybean meal, then producers will use the synthetic amino acids, and if soybean meal provides the amino acids at a lower price, then they will use soybean meal.
How do those prices compare? Are they kind of back and forth?
Well, it is back and forth, but obviously U.S. soybean meal is not very expensive right now, but we still would see that at least a couple of the synthetic amino acids will go into the diets, probably threonine, methionine, and lysine in most diets for pigs right now.
So if you were a soybean producer, what would you do, if anything?
Yeah, I would definitely be concerned about this. What would I do? I would encourage my soybean association to try to make the case for the crushers that we need to have component pricing. They need to move to a system where they reward the higher quality beans. And so if you are a producer who select a high quality bean, then you should get a premium for that bean. I think that is what they should do. But as long as nobody is interested in that, I don't see that this trend is changing.
What, if anything, does it say about using the soybean as a component of livestock feed?
Well, I mean, the trouble would be that there will be less usage of soybean meal long term. And I think just the changes that have happened in China here over the last couple of years should not be underestimated, because China is such a huge country and such a huge consumer of soybeans and soybean meal. And when they decide that they are going from about 20% crude protein in the diets to 16 or even 14%, that takes out a lot of soybean meal, and that's the direction they are going in now. And in fact, now I see that they are having seminars on how to reduce the usage of soybean meal in diets for pigs. So they are really focusing on that right now.
Have you been hearing much about this topic when you're out with your colleagues?
Well, I mean, I was at a meeting there in Ohio in August, and they had called that meeting specifically to discuss this issue. That was organized by the Ohio Soybean Association, and yes, they are concerned about it, and they are trying to find ways to get around this and to change the direction. I don't know how successful they will be, but they are definitely aware of it. Amino acids and protein, then they are very well aware of everything I've said here today. They are very well aware of it. They're aware that the protein is going down, amino acids is going down, and that they are losing their market. And they even had someone come and tell them, if you had a swine production unit in year 2000, you used this many loads of soybean meal every year, and now you only use less than half of that soybean meal in that same unit. So that was just to illustrate how dramatic things have changed. Because they're using synthetic amino acids, and because they're using also distillers grains, which also provide some amino acids. So those two things in combination has pushed out the soybean meal in the rations.
I can remember Hans Lowell Hill, and I ran into him in the halls of Bumford here on campus in the last two or three months, talking about pricing soybeans based on protein in the early 1990s. Just wasn't really ever something that took off.
If you look at the canola industry, both in Canada and in Europe, they have used component payment for many, many years. They have paid on oil and protein for many years. So every time a producer brings in a load of canola, they just use an NIR to analyze moisture, protein, and fat, and then he gets paid based on that. So the technology is there. It's just a matter of being willing to implement it in the U.S. soybean industry. And the Canadians are way ahead of on that in terms of in their canola industry. And as I said, the Europeans have done it for more than 30 years.
That's Hans Stein talking about swine nutrition and the way soybeans and bean meal, along with synthetic amino acids, have been worked into the livestock feed rations for both swine and poultry. Have you tried listening to the Closing Market Report or Commodity Week as a podcast? If not, maybe you should. There's an easy way to do that. Just scroll down to the bottom of our page at willag.org, and you'll find links to some of your favorite podcast applications. If you have those installed on your phone and you just happen to click one of the links, should open the podcast, and you'll be able to just subscribe right there. Even in your house, you can ask Alexa or Google, either one, to play the Commodity Week or Closing Market Report podcast. It sometimes is hit and miss that way, but I'll bet that if you've already subscribed, especially on Google Podcasts, that your Google Home will play the podcast. Why don't you give it a shot? Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report is a podcast, so you can listen to us on demand anytime that you would like. And hey, you can always just tune us in on the radio, too. You know, the world's population is approaching 8 billion people. Have you ever wondered how the Earth's population has grown over time? How did we get to this point? And even more, how do we feed that many people? Because, you know, it is an enormous number. Just how big? Well, in year one of our Christian calendar, there were about 200 million people on the planet with an M. It took about 1,800 years for that number to grow to 1 billion with a B. It's about the same time that Thomas Jefferson, yes, that Thomas Jefferson, was tinkering with the moldboard plow. It's a good thing, and even better when John Deere took the iron plow and made it steel in the 1830s. Oh, and the McCormick Reaper was patented about then, too. And the first grain elevator was built in Buffalo, New York. It took about 300 man-hours to produce 100 bushels of wheat from 5 acres of land in 1830. 20 years later, in 1850, when the world population had grown to 1.2 billion, and those inventions were pretty widely used, a farmer could spend just 90 hours to raise 100 bushels of corn on half that number of acres. Well, some things are so simple and so overlooked, but change everything. Barbed wire. It tamed the West and changed everything about animal husbandry and beef cattle production. Joseph Glidden of DeKalb, Illinois, didn't invent it, but did improve it and is considered the father of modern barbed wire. Fencing. Who knew? It did the job, and by 1927, when the planet passed 2 billion people, the open range had been fenced. I don't think things in the world of hogs weren't changing, too. In 1934, the Landrace breed was imported from Denmark to the United States. Oh, and row crops. It was about that same time the first hybrid seed corn company was founded, 1926, Henry A. Wallace's Pioneer Hybrid. It took about 20 man-hours to produce 100 bushels of corn from 2.5 acres. And farmers began the switch from horses to tractors. Well, in the span of about 30 years, the human race added another billion people. It was 1960, and there were 3 billion of us. Most of America had electricity, and it sure looked like Asia was going to starve to death. Well, Dr. Norman Borlaug, whom I had the pleasure of interviewing for more than an hour in the 1990s, staved that one off when he came across a high-yielding dwarf wheat variety. It saved Asia. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970. Anhydrous ammonia fertilizer and herbicides to control weeds were introduced in the 60s. We grew to 4 billion people by 1975, and it just took 3 man-hours to produce 100 bushels of corn on not 5, but about 1 acre of land. We reached 5 billion people in 1987 and 6 billion in 1999, and during that same period, man learned how to genetically modify plants. Monsanto introduced Roundup Ready soybeans. They were resistant to glyphosate herbicide. Our soils do a better job of staying put today, in large part because Roundup allowed farmers to stop tilling the land as often or as deep. Well, the first BT corn hybrids were introduced then, too. They were resistant to insects. So our planet is now approaching 8 billion people, and for the most part, we have not starved.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.